You're listening to Branch Out by Sycamore.
I feel like going into EM was my calling. I love going to the ER on my shifts and the interactions I have with my patients, staff, nurses, and other colleagues. Think back to what got you to this point in your life and try to focus on the components that made you happy and find avenues that allow you to focus more on those components than the parts that make you unhappy.
I'm Larson Hicks, CEO of Sycamore, and welcome to Branch Out, where I chat with healthcare professionals about broad-reaching topics like their careers in medicine, hobbies and pursuits outside the hospital, and everything in between.
Dr. Busfry, we're excited to have you. I find it inspiring personally just to hear the different journeys that people take, different twists and turns. The overall message is there's not a wrong way to pursue a career. It's also an organic thing that changes as you change and as the landscape changes. It's just helpful for people to hear how other people have done it. That fits pretty well with what you're doing with Pneumos and Physician Grind and EMMed. I'll try not to jump ahead. Let's back up. I'd love to hear, when did you decide you wanted to be a physician? Was that the plan?
Yeah. As I was growing up, I always had an idea that I wanted to be a physician, but I was pretty open to other career paths. When I ended up getting into college, my major was actually bioengineering. So for a while, I was actually thinking that I was going to go down more of the med tech route instead of even pursuing a career in medicine.
You thought you were more geared towards engineering and you started pursuing that. What did you study in school then? Did you start in engineering?
Yeah, it was the bioengineering program at UC San Diego. In that program, we try to apply engineering concepts to how the body works. So there was a lot of theoretical components to what we were studying. But the other part was also looking at medical devices and figuring out how to develop tech from ideas. From there, it felt like medicine was a pretty good way to increase my knowledge base and to be able to have more of a clinical application. It's always been something that I've kept in the back of my mind that I may eventually want to go back into engineering or into med tech, potentially as a consultant. But what I wanted to be able to do was to be able to expand my knowledge base and have that clinical exposure that's necessary to be able to come up with certain ideas that would be successful in med tech.
That got you on the medical path. When did you realize that you were changing gears and you were going full medicine?
I think it was pretty early on in my medical school days that I realized that I really enjoyed patient care. In fact, during my med school experience, I was even considering going into surgery. But what I realized was that in emergency medicine, we have the opportunity to really make impacts on patients' lives during some of the most critical times that they'll ever face. Emergency department, you really need to have that rapport where you can immediately form a bond with your patients and earn their trust. It just felt something that I really enjoyed and wanted to pursue full time. As I got deeper and deeper into my clinical rotations, I realized that emergency medicine was a better fit for me. And from there, I pursued my residency training in EM.
I think you see this a lot in medicine where it's like people who pick a path pretty early, very driven towards that goal. And the idea of any deviation from that path is really failure. But it sounds like you didn't have that mentality.
In emergency medicine, one of the most important things is to be able to think on your feet. I think a lot of us are able to handle changes very well because we face them every day and the clinical status of the patients that we're treating. I've always felt that the most important thing is to make decisions with the information that you have, and then to have the confidence that with whatever the outcome is, you can always pivot or change your management, whether it's life or in medicine, to be able to continue to move forward and to progress in both life and career.
That's interesting. I always find myself, when I'm talking to emergency physicians, I find that as a breed, they're pretty unique in the broader medical field. That's part of your DNA as an ER doctor, is you're somebody who you like thinking on your feet. You like adapting to the situation. It shouldn't be all that surprising to me that so many ER doctors have these interesting side projects and paths and ways that they found their way to medicine. You've done part-time work. You've done some full-time work in medicine. Tell me about after residency. How did your career develop and what did you do after that?
After residency and fellowship, I needed some time to collect my thoughts and to make sense of the experience that I had just had. I actually took a couple of months off and did some traveling. When I came back, what I decided was it would be great for me to be able to try out different clinical scenarios and institutions. So I picked three places that I ended up moonlighting at. What that gave me was the opportunity to see how each shop was different and what the pros and cons were for each one. Eventually, I was able to find one that I felt really comfortable with. I felt that the group I was working with was highly motivated and they wanted to create a lot of change in the department. They were also really fun to work with. They were like a young group. Yeah. So it created a really fun community for me to be part of. I ended up taking the full-time position over there and since then have been practicing EM in Los Angeles. As EM physicians, we're very lucky to have the flexibility to be able to practice in multiple EDs before ever settling on one area. For some people, it's even good to always have that variety in practice. So they pursue locums or they pursue some environment where they're able to constantly help out in areas that are in most need.
First of all, great idea to take some time off and just go decompress after residency. I don't know, that's a luxury that most physicians afford themselves. That's very cool that you did that. But then the fact that you went out and didn't take a job right away, but you moonlighted. Had you moonlighted while you were in residency? Had you already had some experience moonlighting?
I had done some minimal moonlighting. My schedule was pretty full, so I wasn't able to do too much, but I did moonlight a little just to earn some cash on the side.
How did you do that? Was that all just stuff you figured out on your own, or were you working with somebody that helped you navigate that?
The really fun part of residency is the group of people that you end up training with. Everyone's in that same stage of life. They've all kind of had the same experiences, and we're all in the trenches together. So what I believe it was a couple of my friends in the classes above me that guided me into what would be a great place to start as I continue to develop my clinical skills. That way I wasn't suddenly being thrown into the busiest ED in the middle of nowhere, but rather a place that had good resources and good backup so that if I needed help as I was starting to get my sea legs underneath me, then I would be able to. There was a lot of guidance from mentors and senior residents who really helped pave the way for how I ended up choosing my career.
We've seen this trend of groups trying to get people to sign earlier and earlier and offering stipends to doctors who will commit early. Sometimes I've heard right out of medical school before they even start residency. It's like this arms race where it's like, who can get there first? Yeah. I don't know when it'll stop. Maybe they'll start recruiting people in med school. I think it's really cool that you waited and gave yourself the opportunity to see different environments and also that you leaned so heavily on your network. I think that's something that people underappreciate. They want to look to the experts or the big companies or the big whoever. It sounds like you really tapped into friends and mentors and it served you really well. You found a good place to set up shop permanently. So that's really cool. You've done a bunch of stuff on the side. I know you've got Pneumos and Physician Grind and EM Med and other things. Can you tell the story of how you got into those projects?
As I transitioned from that experience of being a resident and a fellow and always being in the hospital and almost having my head planted in the ground because all you know is what's in the hospital because you're there all the time, to suddenly having more time on my hands as being postgraduate, it was initially almost like a shell shock to try and figure out how to navigate the real world again. I was meeting up with friends and trying to, again, develop a normal social life where it's not just the hospital that's your entire life. After a while, you end up realizing you have a lot more time on your hands than you did when you were a resident. We're all highly motivated and always interested in pursuing new challenges. Once I realized I had this extra time, that's when I started reflecting on that experience in residency and started writing a little bit. These were just personal stories that I kept on my laptop. I found it quite therapeutic to be able to just express myself in a different way that I'm used to. As we talked about, I was an engineer as an undergrad. I'm not a writer. I'm not someone who had formal training in writing, but having that artistic expression allowed me to exercise a different part of my brain and allowed me to make sense of the alternate universe that we're in as residents, especially at Dizzy Level 1 Trauma Center. It's just really interesting. So from there, I had all these stories, and then my wife and some of my other friends started reading them. And with their encouragement, they had me decide to publish them online. So that's where the Physician Grind originated. We were lucky enough to start having a following and to build a community. The idea behind it is when you switch from residency where you have your tribe, you have the people that you're in the trenches with, and you're suddenly thrown into the real world, into real EM practice, it can actually be quite isolating. And there is not that group of people that you can go and decompress to. To not really have that can weigh on your mind as you start to suppress a lot of the emotions and a lot of the experiences that you have. So what I really wanted to do, and like the whole idea of this, is to build that community so that people can feel connected and to be able to share their experiences so that they know they're not alone in it. From there, we started having more contributors come in. And initially, all of the stories were written in essay format. We also wanted no real barrier to entry. We wanted this to be owned by physicians. We wanted them to be able to express themselves, like I said, without the normal barriers that come up with academic publishing. We then realized that we should give more avenues for people to express themselves. So we actually created a podcast that complements the website. On that, people can come and tell stories. Before COVID, we were having several open mics where people would gather together. We can't do that anymore. We would just have a microphone and people could come up and tell their stories and have some food and hang out. They were really great events that allowed people to come together and just feel connected. It's interesting because that feeling of isolation is so real, especially if you're in a single coverage in the middle of nowhere practice. Having that outlet and having that community is so important. I think it's what gets EM physicians through a lot of the challenging things that we face.
That's really wonderful. The impact that I'm sure is making and has made on wellness of physicians. Is this emergency physicians primarily? Are they clustered in a particular geography? How have you seen this community grow?
Most of them are EM physicians, but our most recent post was written by an internal medicine pediatric trained physician. We've also had nurses as well because they're on the front lines with us. We're based in Southern California, so our open mics are generally in this area, at least for right now. We hope to expand to other parts of the country as well.
I've read through some of the posts and I've listened to some of the podcasts. And as a non-physician or clinician, it's fascinating to hear from your perspective how you guys see and experience these things that we all just take for granted. What do you think are the biggest challenges right now with the emergency medicine landscape in America?
With COVID, everything has kind of changed. I think the productivity model and the idea of seeing patients as rapidly as possible has to change because we are putting ourselves at risk every time we go in to see a patient. And on top of that, we're putting our staff at risk too, because this is such a highly transmissible virus. The focus on donning and doffing properly and ensuring that, again, we're protecting our patients first and foremost, as well as our staff, makes it so that each case is much more complicated than it was in the past. There's always this lingering anxiety behind each shift, wondering if this is going to be the day that our ED gets flooded. We learned so much from the experiences in Italy and New York. Watching what was happening to our brothers and sisters on the East Coast was so hard for a lot of us. The entire field of emergency medicine is changing because of that. It's really important for us frontline providers to advocate for each other and to provide that support and to continue to advocate that the old models and the way that insurances and other places used to reimburse us needs to change, because really every time we go in to see a patient, the level of complexity is already high. That's one of the most interesting things that I've seen going along, and fully advocate for instead of cutting staffing models in order to increase revenue. I would like to see other hospitals and places encouraging more staffing and more support during this time, because this is one of the most unique times in history. If there's ever a time to activate emergency funds and our emergency protocols, if now is the time, I don't know when it is.
The conversation around COVID is arguing about death rates, efficacy of masks and lockdowns. From the very beginning, one of the biggest fears was capacity at hospitals. What is anybody doing about building capacity for hospitals? That conversation seems like it's almost died in a lot of places. And instead, we'd rather fight and argue and politicize. Let's build capacity. Let's ramp up staff. Let's get ready for this thing. What do you think about that? Have you seen that in your world?
If we look at history and we look at the 1918 influenza, we know the second wave was worse than the first wave. That's been documented. And we always say that we should learn from history. If there's ever a time we should be ramping up, it should be right now. It's important for hospital capacities to increase, for surge planning to be established. Instead of just looking week to week, we need to be able to not just use retrospective data, but prospective data to figure out what are the next moves and really anticipate what we think will happen. There are so many models out there that are projecting hospitalization rates and death rates. And it's important for us to really pay attention to those models. Even in the worst case, we should be prepared for the worst case scenario. Yeah. Like I said, this is a unique time in history.
In a time of uncertainty like this, where we don't know if volumes will come back, how are you and your colleagues thinking of that aspect of it?
The most important thing is we as EM physicians need to come together and advocate for each other and for our field, whether that's on a local level, participating in SAM, ASAP, any of the local organizations or the local chapters of those organizations, or with those organizations at a national level. It's really important for us to be able to tell our stories and to explain that these patients are not normal patients. They're no longer just the patient that comes in who we intubate, throw lines in and admit. There's so much more that goes into even the non-acute patients, because there is, again, the importance of donning and doffing and complications that we're now seeing as a result of COVID that make everything a lot more intense and challenging. It's really important for us to advocate for our field and to actually share our stories and to be able to let lawmakers know what it's like right now, because otherwise, if we don't tell the story, someone else will, and that won't be representative of what's going on.
This is a moment where the nation is listening to medical professionals and want to hear from medical professionals. We need more freedom and more doctors who feel safe enough professionally to be able to speak the truth and speak their mind and be transparent.
Absolutely. Organizations like ASAP, SAM, AAE, all of them all do great work advocating for their physicians. From what I've seen, each of those organizations are really invested in protecting the frontline EM provider and the patients that we serve. That's a lot of what they're focused on.
We talked about moral injury, and just to pivot to that concept, because it's definitely related, you're really trying to make a positive impact on physician wellness through these projects. A lot of people think that burnout is really just a function of hours where you're not getting full night's sleep, but there's more to it than that, right? But what else is missing from that understanding of why physicians are burned out?
Yeah, I think it's the increase in expectations on each provider that usually comes from higher up and insurances that dictate how we can practice. If churning through patients and moving the meat is all that we're valued for, then that eliminates a lot of the reasons why we go into medicine, which is to, again, form those bonds with patients, make a difference, and to be able to really form those connections. We all go into medicine wanting to help people. That's the whole reason we all wrote about in our med school application essay. A lot of that gets beaten out of us. And when that happens, that's when burnout really happens, because that satisfaction is no longer there. That conversation that you had with a patient while you're carefully suturing up their face is no longer possible, because at the same time, you're stressed about how long it's taking because you need to see other patients. Advocating for the wellness component of it would be to ensure that we give physicians the space to be able to see patients at a rate that's acceptable and allows them to really be able to have the time to treat patients well.
For a lot of physicians, they don't maybe know or feel that they have that walkaway power. They feel like my whole job security, my identity is all tied up in working for this one hospital or in this one location. You've moonlighted a lot of places. You started businesses on the side. What do you say to that physician who feels like, I can't work here anymore, and I feel like I can't say anything about it? I've tried in healthy ways and in productive ways, and I get shut down every time I try. What's the answer for someone in that situation?
I want to tell them, you are a precious commodity. You are not someone who is just average. You are incredible, and you've done incredible things with your life, getting through med school and residency. Hold that value and understand that about yourself. We've all kind of been type A personalities that have always wanted the next step planned out before we even get there. And that's something that we've always been as med students and residents, always looking a couple of steps ahead and making sure that we have all of that planned out. You are smart and can handle whatever challenges come up. So make decisions and be able to pivot and think on your feet the way you do on your clinical practice, and you'll be able to either find a new hospital to work for or a new working situation that makes sense to you, whether that's locums or else that can bring back joy. Everyone's always thought to think of retirement and to work towards that goal, but what's the point of retiring? Keep going. Find a mix that brings balance to your life and brings happiness. And instead of focusing on that retirement date, focus on the career enjoyment now, because that's most important.
I love that you brought in the retirement piece. Financial well-being and financial independence is awesome. That's a great thing to work towards. But retiring early or having a bunch of money in the bank is ultimately not going to be what's going to sustain you long-term. I'm still young, but I hope to die in harness. I hope to work until I'm dead. Work is part of the joy of life. The idea of sitting on a beach sipping a margarita, I think sounds awesome. On day three of that, I'd be like bored out of my mind. You've worked in different settings. It feels to me like you are discovering what your calling specifically is, and you're molding your life around that calling. Yes, emergency medicine is a huge part of that, but that's not necessarily the primary identity or calling that you have for yourself. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think I'll always be an EM physician at the core. It's just who I am and it's what I've worked and trained to be. That makes up a huge part of my identity and who I am. Mm-hmm. And I feel like going into EM was my calling. Yeah. I really love going to the ER on my shifts. I love the interactions I have with my patients. I love the interactions I have with my staff and my nurses and my other colleagues. For me, that's really important. Think back to what got you to this point in your life and try to focus on the components that made you happy and find avenues that allow you to focus more on those components than the parts that make you unhappy. No job's perfect. I think every place has its pros and cons, and there's not really an ideal 100%. Everything is beautiful and great. But if there are more things that make you happy than upset you, then that's a good thing. So just continue to build on that side of the seesaw, and that will allow you to have the energy and have the will to continue to explore additional things that relate to emergency medicine, but allow you to be creative in other ways.
I do want to spend some time just talking a little bit more about your website and your work there. Can you give me some examples of some of the most impactful, surprising, and inspiring pieces of content from your side or your podcast?
Yeah, I think the variety of stories have been what's been most impressive. Some of the stories are really funny. I think we as EM physicians use humor oftentimes to cope with some of the madness that we face. A lot of times we make jokes about things that are really hard to deal with. That's just our coping mechanism. It's our way to be able to handle what we've experienced and to be able to show up the next day and not break down. At the same time, some of the stories are really thoughtful and are very intense and sad. Reading those make it a lot more relatable and allows us to cope with these experiences in a realistic way where we can't just make jokes about everything. I didn't really expect too many of those stories because with my friends, my other colleagues, we laugh, we joke, we help each other that way. To see the other side of that was very nice and very rewarding.
The primary contributors to the site are clinicians, emergency physicians primarily. Do you see them as also the primary audience, or do you expect the readership to change over time? Do you want it to change? How do you see that growing?
Yeah, I think the focus will always be on the providers, who I want the primary audience to be, who our target audience is. I want to stay true to that, and that's who we'll cater to. If non-clinicians begin increasing their viewership or begin visiting the site more, that's great. We would love that, but honestly, my focus is more on supporting our physician and provider community and making sure that they feel supported and have their outlets.
You're doing written stuff. You're now doing audio stuff. Do you see it taking any other forms? Do you think you'll ever get into video or anything else? You're doing live open mics. Have you thought about open mics in this COVID world?
We were toying with ideas of having a Zoom meetup where people could share stories that way. I think that's something that's definitely on deck for us. There's something that's so valuable about all of the providers being in the same space and feeding that energy. That, I think, is the most valuable part in addition to people being able to just share stories. It is really hard that we're not able to do that. And that's been one of the more challenging things about COVID is that we have to isolate from one another. It's that support system and us being together that really help pull us through the dark days and everything.
It's awesome that you've already built and established this back catalog of content material. I can imagine a burned out physician after a long shift where face-to-face is so limited and difficult. It's awesome that this exists out there, and I'm really glad that you're doing it. We're definitely going to make sure all of our doctors know about it. If they want to contribute, how does that happen?
What I would say is think about the stories that you tell your friends when you're out at a party and just take 15 minutes in a day and put it down on a sheet of paper. Have it be an exercise where it's almost a stream of consciousness that you're just recording. That way it takes a lot of the pressure off of having a perfect piece, which I think we're all perfectionists and people who want to make sure that what we produce is the best. Then give yourself a couple of days and then go back, take a look, add things, delete things, edit it however you want. That's about it. We want to ensure that there isn't a significant barrier to entry. This should be a fun process, not a stressful process. Myself and our team are happy to help with any brainstorming or ideas or development of content. If you are interested in participating, feel free to shoot us an email at physiciangrind@numos.com. You can submit pieces there and we'll reach back out to you. My goal, again, is to support our physicians, and this should not be another task or something that is hard, but rather something that is fulfilling and good. I want to ensure that the process of creating whatever you decide to create is something that is easy and streamlined. If you're an artist and you love drawing or a photographer or anything like that, it's open to all forms of creative expression. And we want to make sure that people have whatever outlet they want.
That's very cool. Great talking to you, Dr. Busfry. I'm excited to share what you're doing with Sycamore physicians all over the country, and hope that you're able to continue to do this and it grows and is able to help more and more physicians. I really appreciate you making the time for us.
Thank you so much. And it was really great getting to speak with you, Larson.
We'll see you.
Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to Branch Out, a podcast by Sycamore. If you'd like to be featured on a future episode, connect with us at sycamoredocs.com. That's sycamoredocs.com.